are glad you're here and have joined us for worship today, and just thank you for your presence and also your understanding and starting a little later. We're planning next Sunday to be back to normal schedule with Sunday school again, but if you would see what's back there right now, there just wasn't a good way to navigate through there. It's quite a mess, so hopefully we'll get to the other side of that. I'm kind of at the stage now where I'm about ready for it to be cleaned up and done, but we've got a little ways to go yet, so thank you for that, and hopefully everybody did get the message. If you do know at a time like that of someone who's been attending, but they're not maybe been a real regular very long and needs to know a message like that, please let them know, because we do it on the phone system and kind of depend on people finding out that way. I'm going to open it up right now. Is there anyone here who has an announcement, and they will get a mic to you? Raise your hand if anyone here has an announcement that they need to make right now. Just take a moment, if anyone. Okay, does not look like it. I want to just give a word of appreciation and thanks to all of you for the vote last Sunday. We had a fairly high number of votes. It was 196 votes, and it was entirely unanimous in support of Joe being the next senior pastor. So I know that means a lot to Joe, to know the church is behind him, and in the coming years that will mean a lot. And so thank you for that. I think it speaks well for you as a church embracing that, and gives me hope as we move forward with that in the future here at the end of the year, that the transition can go well. I know it'll be a time of adjustment for everyone, but I think if we work together, it will be such a blessing for all of us as a church. So thank you for that. I'd like to invite you to turn to John chapter 8, and we want to look at John chapter 8. We're going to begin at verse 31 through verse 59, kind of dividing the chapter up into two parts. Last part had been a little more of a focus on Jesus, the light of the world, and today the title of the message is simply, "The Truth Sets Us Free." And it's one of the promises that Jesus made that, in a nutshell, I think encapsulates why he came into this world. And that is Jesus' statement, "You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." And that is still true today just as much as it was back when Jesus said it. We're going to look at the context of it. I'm also going to kind of move away from it a little bit to talking about us here today, because I think we have to make application about it. We will get to that then, but I do want to look at some of the context of what Jesus is saying, and it's rather remarkable. So notice what occurs throughout this text. Notice where we start, and then notice where this goes. So Jesus said to the Jews who had believed him, "If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." They answered him, "We are offspring of Abraham and have never been enslaved to anyone. How is it that you say you will become free?" Jesus answered them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who practices sin is a slave to sin. The slave does not remain in the house forever. The son remains forever. So if the son sets you free, you will be free indeed. I know that you are Abraham's offspring, yet you seek to kill me because my word finds no place in you. I speak of what I've seen with my father, and you do what you have heard from your father." They answered him, "Abraham is our father." Jesus said to them, "If you were Abraham's children, you would be doing the works Abraham did. But now you seek to kill me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. This is not what Abraham did. You are doing the works your father did." They said to him, "We were not born of sexual immorality. We have one father, even God." Jesus said to them, "If God were your father, you would love me, for I came from God and I'm here. I came not of my own accord, but he sent me. Why do you not understand what I say? Is it because you cannot bear to hear my word? You are of your father the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies. But because I tell the truth, you do not believe me. Which one of you convicts me of sin? If I tell the truth, why do you believe me? Why do you not believe me? Whoever is of God hears the words of God. The reason why you do not hear them is that you are not from God. The Jews answered him, "Are we not right in saying that you are a Samaritan and have a demon? Jesus answered, "I do not have a demon, but I honor my Father, and you dishonor me. Yet I do not seek my own glory. There is one who seeks it, and he is the judge. Truly, truly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death." The Jews said to him, "Now we know that you have a demon. Abraham died, as did the prophets, yet you say, if anyone keeps my word, he will never taste death. Are you greater than our father Abraham, who died, and the prophets died? Who do you make yourself out to be?" Jesus answered, "If I glorify myself, my glory is nothing. It is my Father who glorifies me, of whom you say, 'He is our God.' But you have not known him. I know him. If I were to say I do not know him, I would be a liar like you. But I do know him, and I keep his word. Your father Abraham rejoiced that he would see my day. He saw it and was glad." So the Jews said to him, "You are not yet 50 years old, and have you seen Abraham?" Jesus said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am." So they picked up stones to throw at him, but Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple. One of the questions that this passage raises is, what does it mean to be a disciple of Jesus? What does it take to be a follower of Jesus? Does it mean you have a front row seat to some really awesome things? You can watch him feed 5,000 people, you can watch him raise the dead, and you get to see all of that, and you get to see incredible displays of power, and you get to say, "I'm a part of this movement that is this great movement that is going on, that is doing astounding things." Jesus goes through a time when he's popular. People go out by the multitudes to listen to him speak, and they love to hear his words. And one of the things that we confront in our passage of Scripture is Jesus' response to all of that. You see, if Jesus would have said, "Popularity is a very fragile thing. If you got it, do everything you can to keep it. And if you have popularity, you're going to be speaking to far more people. You're going to reach more people with the truth if you stay popular. So if you have crowds coming to hear you, these people, you got an opportunity to speak to them. So if people profess a certain level of belief in you, applaud them for it and say, 'Hey, this is great, this is awesome.'" So we begin our text, and it says that Jesus said this to the Jews who believed in him. So they're listening to what he has to say, and they're agreeing with it, and they're saying, "That's really good, and we actually believe what this guy is saying." But what we have to confront is that Jesus does not applaud them for their belief. He doesn't say, "Man, I am so glad you're starting to get it. I'm so glad that you are on your way. This is just wonderful. This is awesome." We might be tempted to do that. Now, I would say this: Jesus can say things that we can't say because he could see people's heart. But nevertheless, there's a principle here that truth matters. And Jesus is more concerned about revealing the Father than he is about popularity. And it costs him his life. Look, if Jesus would have told these people, "I am so glad you're starting to believe in me. I'm so glad you're starting to get it. I am so glad. You guys are wonderful people, and you're children of Abraham, you're Jews, and you're getting it, and this is what we want," and then send them home, would have been popular. Instead, he starts pushing back. And what Jesus is looking for is heartfelt belief and genuine faith that comes as a result of love for Jesus. That's what he wants. That's what he wants today. And a profession of belief that doesn't arise out of true belief or genuine faith or out of love means nothing to him. It didn't mean anything to him there, and it means nothing to him today. And so if I don't really live it out, if I say, oh yeah, I believe in you, Jesus, but I don't really live it, I don't live the kind of life that honors God, God is not impressed at all with my own profession of something that doesn't really honor him in the end. Many believed in him, but then he pushes back and says, this is what true belief really is. So what we're going to do, I want to look first of all at the truth sets us free. I want to look at slavery to sin. And we're going to work our way down through the text, and then I want to make some application of some of these things. But we're dealing with a subject here, kind of two things here, truth and freedom. And I think, as I think about it, that freedom is probably one of the strongest desires that we as humans have. I think it's one of the strongest ones. If you think about yourself as a follower of God, being set free from God, for me, the day that I experienced salvation and experienced freedom that Jesus gives from my own sinful ways was one of the greatest days of my life. But I also live with this incredible longing for a fullness of freedom, one from the battle with sin forever. But think about this. If you're a follower of Jesus today, the day that you are set free from a world that is captive to sin, to sickness, to death, where tragedy happens, and the day that you are with Jesus and that's over and you will never have that again and you are free, will be the most glorious day you've ever experienced. And in that moment, you'll be like, man, the freedom is just wonderful. But for all of us to know freedom is something we long for. We don't look in the right places for it of our own accord, but we do long to be free. So the statement implies several things, and I'm referring to verse 32, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. So the implication is that there are falsehoods and there are deceptions that we are present in the world in which we live, because Jesus says, if you know the truth, it will set you free. So I want to look at a couple things in the context here. What I call lie number one, that these people believed. I think one of the primary lies that these people listening to him believed was, I am a good person. That was the basis of how they're talking to Jesus is, I am a good person, and you ought to applaud me for all the effort I put into being a good person. There's something remarkable about Jesus' ministry, and you notice the conflict that keeps building in this passage of Scripture. The accusations keep getting more and more serious that they make to Jesus about trying to belittle him or trying to degrade him. It gets more serious. But there's something interesting going on, and if you think about the Gospels as a whole, how it's recorded in Jesus' ministry, something that I notice that is remarkable is that people who did not believe they were good liked to be around Jesus. Did you ever notice that or think about it? People who other people said, you're no good, you're a misfit, you're an outcast, you're never going to be good enough. Those people, many of them, enjoyed hanging out with Jesus. Think even of his disciples, the 12 disciples, and this would come from the cultural context. Many people understand that when you look at the 12 disciples, these were rejects. So young men, when they reached the age of 12, had their bar mitzvah. Soon after that, they would be looking to become a student of a rabbi, and this rabbi would take him under their wing, and the primary or premier rabbis, we would say, men like Gamaliel, they would choose from the cream of the crop. So if they're interviewing, you know, you young guys here, We would only take, a guy like him would only take the brightest, the most intelligent of you, and the rest of you, you can go find another rabbi. So Paul gets to be a student of Gamaliel because he's an incredibly bright man. Most people that look at the disciples, because of their age, believe these were men that no rabbi would take under his wing. And they simply would say, you're not good enough. So the message they had gotten was, you're not smart enough, you're not bright enough, you don't have enough potential. And who does Jesus choose? Those guys. And they love being with him. But what you notice is that people who were convinced of their own goodness had a lot of issues with Jesus. They couldn't hack him. And we'll get to that a little bit later, why some of that is. But let me ask the question, as we look at this text, how did the Jews come to believe so strongly in their own goodness? How did this group of people that are the audience become so absolutely convinced that they were such incredibly good people? Well, think about this. They were God's chosen people. They had the law given to them. They had a godly heritage. And in spite of their remarkably inferior status on the world stage, they regarded themselves as ultimately superior. I look at that and I can't make sense of it. There are some things here in this text that when I read it, I can't make sense of it. Because if you look at the world stage, the Israelites were not major players. Hardly ever were they major, major players on the world stage. Kind of the peak of their kingdom would have been when David was king. But from the time that the kingdom was divided up until the time Jesus is there, they are essentially minor players on the world stage. They're downtrodden by lots of other nationalities. But in their world, and according to parts of the law, they didn't get part of it, but the world was actually divided kind of into two categories, clean and unclean. Clean and unclean marked the way that they viewed the world. And they viewed themselves as clean. Gentiles and foreigners were unclean. Samaritans, those were unclean. Tax collectors, those were unclean. Sinners, those were unclean. And for these Jews who kept the law, they prided themselves in believing that we are clean and therefore superior in God's eyes to every other human being. That's hard to comprehend, but it's what they believed. Pulpit commentary says this about them. They are waiting, these people who profess belief, for some special sign that their belief of Jesus' words was to be immediately rewarded. And instead, Jesus does two things. And I want you to hear this. There's two things Jesus does. Number one, he puts their belief to the test. So do you really believe? Here's what it takes to really believe. Do you believe? And here's the other one that he did. He holds up God's mirror to these people so they can see themselves as God sees them. Oh, that made them so angry because they were like, what I look in the mirror and see is not how I look. Now, some of us would like to deny that when we look in the mirror, that's exactly how I look. I don't have as many gray hairs, the mirror says I do. But think about this. You know, I can argue with that. It doesn't really matter. It is what it is. It's not going to change. But you cannot argue with God's mirror. See, truth is like a mirror that God puts in front of us, and when we look in that mirror, it's exactly how we are. We can't argue with God. You can never argue with him. They understood. Think about this. So let's just look, verse 31. If you abide in my words, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth. None of those things set them off. It is the next thing that gets them so angry, and the truth will set you free. They understood it. They understood his implication, and that is, you guys are in bondage, and you need to be free. They said, we're never in bondage to anybody, to which I want to say, What? What? Think about it. They had been in bondage in Egypt. They got out of there. When they departed from God, they were in bondage to the Assyrians, who were brutal. Then the Babylonians come around. They're in bondage to them. They're in bondage to the Persians. Then they're in bondage to the Greeks, which is horrible. If you read what Antiochus Epiphanes did, it was horrendous. And then the Romans come around, and they're in bondage to them. And these people are like, we have never been in bondage to anyone. I'm like, what? Well, listen to the words in the Siege of Masada. This would have been after the destruction of Jerusalem. Siege of Masada in AD 73. This is Eleazar the priest. Here's what he says. So they've destroyed Jerusalem already, destroyed the temple. Now there's the Siege of Masada. Eleazar the priest said this. He says, long ago we determined to be neither slaves to Rome nor to anyone else. And then they committed suicide because they didn't want to be captured. Lie number two, they believe, was we are free. How did these people come to that belief? I mean, we look at it and are like, how could people who have been in bondage so many years of their national history say, we have never been in bondage to anybody? Have you ever heard that one? I don't even know the whole thing anymore, about the parent who told the kid to sit down, and the kid says, I might be sitting down on the outside, but inside I'm standing up. That's these people. They are. So we're like, oh, how can they be this way? How can they do these things? How can they say these things? Man, how would you ever come to that belief? Not so fast. What's their problem? Is it that they don't recognize the bondage? I think when I look at their problem, it is pride and selfishness and self-centeredness. And as much as we criticize them, have you ever been proud? Have you ever been selfish? Have you ever been self-centered? We have the exact same problem these people did. We don't maybe believe the exact stuff they did, but we have the same problems in our lives. And it is precisely that that keeps us from being free. See, we've got to recognize that it is our own wayward tendencies that lead us into bondage. The offer of freedom that Satan gives to you is a lie. You will never be free if you follow the ways of your carnal desires. And there's always the appeal that if I do what I want to, I will be free. And you will not. What you will discover if you're doing what you want to is that you are in bondage to your own sinful desires. Because sin leads us to bondage. It is only when we come to recognize the truth that we become free. And I want you to think about what happens here. And then we'll move to the slavery to sin to cover that a little more fully. But when Jesus is speaking about truth, he's talking about something in the revelation that he brings that is so different from what they had before. John chapter 1 speaks about it. It says, the law was given by Moses. Grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. Grace and truth came through Jesus. The law was written on tablets of stone. A stone tablet cannot show you mercy. If this is stone and this is the law is cold and it is hard. It tells you you're wrong or it tells you you're right, but it can do nothing. It cannot show you love. It cannot show you mercy. It cannot give you grace. And then Jesus says, I've come into the world to reveal the Father to you, and for the first time, truth is wrapped up in a person who can show mercy and who can show love. And now, instead of a cold law that just says you're guilty and you're a sinner, grace and truth are embodied in a person who extends mercy and extends grace. I want to go a little further in looking at Jesus offers freedom from slavery to sin. Consider this. These people are law-abiding people. From everything we know, many of them were very meticulous about keeping the law. How were these people who were meticulous in keeping God's law a slave to sin? Well, they're in bondage to their own selves. And they're trying through their own energy to be good enough for God to accept them, thinking they deserve for God to applaud them for the incredible effort they're putting forth, but they fail to realize that all of us can never be good enough. You can never be good enough. I can never be good enough. And at times, that can appeal to us. It's possible that someone is here today in church because going to church seems like a good thing to do, and certainly that will make me a better person. No, it won't. Proximity does not provide salvation. And I think about that one often. It's probably one that kind of tears my heart up sometimes when I think about it. But I think about the fact that there's people who come to church here Sunday after Sunday, and they are so close, but they never know Jesus. You can be here every Sunday and not know Him. You're very close. You hear the gospel. These people were right standing in front of Jesus, and unless they repented later, their end was horrible. And they were so close. They were right there, right in front of Jesus, who could give them everything they longed for, and they were like, no, we're free. Sometimes we profess freedom, and we think that freedom will come from doing as I please. And if I can do whatever I want to, now I'm free. I'm free from restrictions. I'm free from any inhibitions and anything my parents told me to do. I'm free. If you tried to live that way, you found out one thing. You're in bondage to yourself. And the freedom that you thought was so great leads to misery. And eventually, and I've heard many of you share it in your testimony, that the freedom that you pursued after, once you were out there doing whatever you want to, you found out you were a miserable person. And you were like, I'm tired of the misery. That's where all of us have to come to before we're ready for the freedom that Jesus gives us. We have to recognize that I'm actually in bondage to myself. I'm bondage to my own desires. And if you do whatever you want to, you're not free. You discover that you cannot control those desires. Jesus alludes to that in this statement that he makes. It is in verse 35 of John chapter 8. And let me just read that, because we may gloss over it when we read it. It's what Jesus says. He says, "The slave does not remain in the house forever. The Son remains forever." So a person who is a slave in the sense of being owned by a master has no control over where he ends up. The master can sell him at any moment. He can ship him off or trade him for goods, whatever. He has no control where he ends up. The Son, who is there by his relationship to his Father, stays in the house. When people choose to follow sin and become a slave to sin, you do not control where you end up. Sin exercises dominion over you. And you end up maybe where you never thought you would. And one of the lies Satan gives to people is you can participate in sin and engage in sin, and you can control where this goes. You can stop whenever you want to. You can try this that is sinful. You can do it for however long you choose, and then at whatever moment you want, you can quit it. And it's one of Satan's lies. You cannot do that. And we find that out when we give in to wrong, sinful desires that we don't have a control over. And then suddenly, we find that we are a slave to the very thing we thought was a privilege to do whatever we wanted to. There are people constantly in our circles who are slaves to sinful desires. Some of you may be sitting here today and there's things that you're a slave to, addictions, pornography or whatever. And you might have thought there was an offer of freedom, but once you engage in that stuff and become hooked on it, you discover that you are in bondage. And only Jesus can set you free. Only coming to Him, recognizing that it is only through Jesus that I can find freedom, and trusting in His grace and embracing that truth comes from Him. See, every temptation that Satan gives to us, every single one, is first of all Satan dangling something in front of us to entice us that he will actually never give us what it promises us. So he might promise you pleasure, but he will take it from you. He promises you all kinds of things, and then he never gives. He promises you freedom, but what he gives to you instead is bondage and slavery. He never gives, and that is Jesus' point. Satan is a liar. And when we fall into sin, we believe the lies that Satan puts in front of us. And only when we embrace truth will we really know what freedom is. And when we embrace Jesus Christ, we discover that. They made the mistake of believing that because they were descendants of Abraham by blood, they were true children of Abraham. And Jesus makes it clear that the only true children of Abraham are those who share in the kind of faith that Abraham had. That's the only one. Now, the next one that Jesus gets to that I want to talk about a little bit is that we reflect our Father. And that issue comes up throughout this context, and it's something that Jesus says to these people, that they're reflecting their Father, and obviously they don't love to hear what he has to say about who their Father is. They claim that Abraham is their Father. But we do reflect the person who is our Father, and all of us do. If we are in a relationship with God, then God is reflected in my life. And if I say I'm a follower of God, but my life doesn't match up, I'm reflecting who I'm really a servant to. There's kind of an interesting thing there. We reflect our dads in one way or another. I hear that for myself. People hear me talk and they say it sounds like my dad. Sometimes have you ever seen somebody walk and you knew their dad and you're like, oh my goodness, that guy walks just like his dad. We don't even think about it, genetics. Well, that's kind of on a lighter side, but what Jesus says is you reflect your Father. And so whoever it is you're serving, who's your master, that becomes reflected in the kind of life that you live. Now you think about what Jesus is confronting them about. The Jews of Jesus' day had no trouble believing that Gentiles were children of the evil one. That wasn't difficult at all. But never a Jew, particularly one who professed love for God. And now I want to look at a few specific things here and then wrap this up about what Jesus says about lineage revealing who we are. And I want to touch on just a number of verses within our text here. And I want you to notice these in verse 39. They say, Abraham is our father. Jesus says to them, if you were Abraham's children, you would be doing the works Abraham did. Those who are followers of God do the works that faith produces. So it's impossible to say I am one of God's children, but there's no evidence of it. God at work in our lives produces within us a response in faith to Him. Look at verse 42. Jesus confronts them on the issue of love. Those who are God's children love truth, and they love Jesus because Jesus is truth revealed to us. And so there's a deep love for that. Verse 47. Whoever is of God hears the words of Jesus. And so those who are followers of God are characterized by both their desire and willingness to listen to the words of Jesus, and might add with that their willingness to obey and to follow what Jesus says. Verse 49, they say Jesus has a demon. He says, I honor my Father and you dishonor me. So those who are God's children always seek to bring honor and glory to God. It's a characteristic of those who are followers of Jesus. And the last one in verse 56, Jesus says this. He says, Abraham rejoiced. He's looking forward by faith to the day when I would show up on this world to provide redemption. He looked forward to that day, and he had such incredible joy at the thought that one day God would send a redeemer. That's not where these people were. If you notice some of the accusations they made against Jesus, one of them was, so he's talking about the fact that their father is not who they think it is. They think Abraham is their father. What's their accusation to him? We were not born of sexual immorality. What are they reflecting? Jesus, you don't know who your dad is. We think you were born out of some kind of sin before your mom got married, and you don't know who your dad is. They had a low view of him. And when Jesus spoke, they refused to look in the mirror. I want you to notice, and we're going to close and wrap up with this, but in Hebrews chapter 1, verse 3, here's what it says about Jesus. The Son is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of his nature. When you look at Jesus, you literally see God. And for any of us to experience the offer of freedom that Jesus gives in this, I have to be willing to look in the mirror and allow God's mirror to be held up in front of me and to see what God sees and admit what it is that God sees. And that's the only way that I will ever experience freedom, is when I agree with what God says. That's their whole problem. They refuse to agree with what God says about them. Had they at this point said, oh my goodness, I never knew that Jesus, I cannot believe that I have been this kind of person, they would have found freedom. But they didn't. They wouldn't look. The gospel is, I would say it this way, so the word gospel means good news, but the gospel is bad news, good news. And before we can accept the good news, we have to admit the bad news. And the bad news is, I've got to see myself the way God sees me, which is some really bad news. That I'm deserving of punishment, I'm deserving of hell and of death. I am not deserving of what Jesus offers. And then only are we ready to receive the good news that Jesus gives, and that of freedom. Because once I admit how bad I am and how desperate I need help, now I'm ready to embrace Jesus. These people full of their goodness, they never found it. All their life they declared they're free. I don't know when they ever figured out, was it after they died that they're in bondage? But today, you have an opportunity. If you're in bondage to sin, Jesus is the one who sets us free. And that's the only place you'll ever be free. And once you discover the freedom that Jesus alone can give, you will, for the very first time in your life, if you've never known it before, know what it is to be really, really free. So if you're in bondage today, find someone to pray with. Don't do what these people did and kind of glance at the mirror and say, nope, that's not how it is. Allow God, shine his light, because in Jesus there's freedom. And that freedom and that offer is available to everyone today. So thank you for being here. We're going to stand and we'll have a dismissal benediction. So please stand and we'll close in prayer. God, we look at the incredible offer that Jesus made of freedom coming through knowing the truth, through knowing you, to seeing ourselves, first of all, as you see us, and then seeing Jesus for all that he is, and to know that that offer of freedom is for every one of us here today. And God, the freedom that you give is unlike any other freedom that anyone offers. It is genuine, lasting freedom. And so I pray that each one today may experience that in their heart, in their life. Thank you for your presence here. Guide us as we leave here and help us to walk in the freedom that you give us. We pray this all in the precious name of Jesus. Amen. You are dismissed.